Okay, so let's begin. So we read in this, in Parshas Matos, the first of the two parshos, about a conversation that Moshe has with the tribes of Reuven and Gad about them wanting to settle in the eastern side of the Jordan River. In Perek Lamed Beis of in Parshas Matos, Pasuk Aleph, Mikne Rav Hayulimnei Reuven Vlimnei Gad Atzum Od. The children of Reuven and Gad have a lot of cattle. Vayruas Eretz Yazer Ves Eretz Gilad Vineya Mako Mako Mikneh. And so this, they see that the land of Yazer, the land of Gilad, which is on the eastern side of the Jordan River, is a place that's good for a lot of cattle. And they come to Moshe, and they have a conversation with Moshe. They have a negotiation with Moshe. And I think I've given a shiur before about whether Moshe misinterpreted their intentions, or whether their intentions were initially not to help their brethren conquer Eretz Yisrael, but eventually the negotiations between Moshe and the Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven conclude. I skipped to Pasuk Chavtes. V'yomer Moshe aleihem. Moshe says to them, "Im yavru Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven itchem et Yarden kol chalutz ha'mochama lifnei Hashem v'nichpesha ha'aretz lifneichem." He says, if the children of God and children of Reuven go with you, cross the Jordan, all the armed soldiers to help your brethren conquer the land, then you can settle on the eastern side of the Jordan River. And in Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayaru b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven le'mor, es asher dibar Hashem el avadecha ke na'aseh, we will fulfill this condition. Navor, nachnu navor chalotzun fnei Hashem, eretz kanan, v'itanu achuzat nachaltem eretz meifer la'yordain. And we will cross the Jordan River armed before God in Canaan, but our land, lasting inheritance, our property will be on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So for the first 32 psukim of Perek Lamed Beis, there is this negotiation taking place between Moshe and Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven. And all of a sudden, Pasuk Lamed Gimel, we're introduced to another party. Vayitein lahem Moshe lebnei Gad lebnei Reuven v'lachatzi shiv Menashe ben Yosef es mamlecha Sichon melech ha'omori v'es mamlechas Og melech ha'bashan haretz la'areha b'gvulos arei haretz aviv. So which other party are we introduced to? Menashe. Part of the tribe of Menashe all of a sudden is given a part of the land in the eastern side of the Jordan River. And in Pasuk Lamites, we find that Vayelchu b'nei Machir ben Menashe Gilada, the children of Machir ben Menashe go to Gilad, Vayelchu Duha, they conquered Vayoresh Samar Shabra, and they drive out the Morim who are living there. Vayitain Moshe sa Gilad la Machir ben Menashe v'yishabah, and Moshe gives the Gilad to Machir ben Menashe, he lives there. V'yair ben Menashe halach, and Yair ben Menashe went, v'yilkod es chavoteyem, v'yikratem chavot Yair. So he conquers other land called Chavot Yair, calls it Chavot Yair. V'novach, someone named Novach halach, v'yilkod et Kenas v'espinoseha, conquers Kenas and the suburbs, v'yikrat la Novach v'shmo, and he calls it, I guess, Novach, or he calls it in his name. So we find, so a couple of things here. So we have Menashe, that they're now conquering land, and Moshe's okay with it. So I have three questions, and they're all related to each other. Number one, why is Menashe joined with Reuven and Gad at the end, after negotiations are set, where they weren't part of the original request? They weren't part of the original negotiations. Why are they joining right now? Secondly, why is Menashe not bound by the agreement by which Reuven and Gad are bound? Right? Reuven and Gad basically say that they agree that they will cross the Jordan River, at least the soldiers will, to help fight the battle. Now, we don't find that Menashe agrees to this. Were they subject to this agreement or not? it doesn't say anywhere that they are subject to this agreement. And number three, let's try to understand what had happened. Sichon and Og attacked Moshe and the Bnei Israel, and Moshe and the Bnei Israel defeated them, and they wiped them out. So there was all this unsettled land, and now, so what's interesting is that Menashe has to conquer more land. In other words, they didn't settle, it seems like they didn't settle, or they didn't only settle in land that was already conquered. It seems they're conquering new land on the eastern side of the Jordan River, as opposed to Reuven and Gad, who want to settle the land that Klal Yisrael conquered from Sichon and Og. So those are the three, you know, questions I think that jump out when we read the story. Why is Menashe only mentioned at the end? Why are they not seemingly bound by the agreement by which Reuven and Gad are bound? And why must Menashe specifically conquer land as opposed to Reuven and Gad? Any thoughts initially before I share with you different approaches? And what's the function of Menashe?
Well, I would guess that Menashe saw what was going on and said, guess what? We have a lot of cattle also. That they saw what was going on. And then another thing that just, it's very imprecise. The Torah is very imprecise because the Torah says, my viewing, my limb viewing, it says, v'chatzi shevet Menashe, when it really wasn't chatzi shevet Menashe. It was a fraction of Menashe. I believe the Ramban says 1/11 or 1/12. I don't remember exactly, something like that.
It's a good question. What exactly? Not clear exactly the numbers. I'm not going to address that, but it probably right. It means, but it's not precise. It's emphasizing that part go and part stay. But yeah, it's a fair point. Did Menashe simply join together with the group afterwards? Like maybe. What's interesting though is like we don't find that they asked Moshe, can we join as well? And if that's the case, were they bound by the agreement with Reuven and Gad? So I just want to share with you,
just a thought, that the Torah is just giving you like the details of what happened when they conquered, Sichon and Og, that Menashe was the one who did it. So you did it, so you can get that land.
You're saying this happened beforehand.
It's possible. That's
interesting.
Like, more details. What happened?
Right. In other words, you're saying that interesting. You're saying that they, even though it's written afterwards, it's explaining why Moshe gave them some land. Which they conquered. Okay, interesting. I haven't seen anything, but that's sounds very important. I'm going to share with you three different approaches as to answer this, and there are more, but we'll set up with three approaches. So the first is the Tsror Hamor. This is Rav Avram Saba, 15th century Spanish commentary. He asked the question: Vim Tomar, mi hichnis kan chati shev Menashe ki him lo shalu davar. Who brought in this part of a tribe of Menashe? They didn't ask for anything. So he says, "Vulai, maybe kihem gam kein nischabru im Reuven v'Gad lishol zot haaretz l'nachala." Maybe they also asked, right? The Judah's thing. Maybe they also asked. Va'kasuv lo hiskiram lefi shehayim muatim. They weren't fully a half. There's a small group from Menashe who also wanted. It can't be that Moshe forced them to live in Chutz Laaretz. I mean, the simple understanding, if you read the Psukim, is that Moshe makes a deal with Bnei Gad and Bnei Reuven, and then Moshe says, okay, Gad and Reuven, you're taking this land, and also part of Shevet Menashe. But Tsror HaMor says it can't be that Moshe forced them to live there. It must be they asked. So probably it was like a small group, and therefore they weren't really part of the negotiations, but in reality, they were still subject to the entire deal with that Moshe made with Bnei Gad, Bnei Reuven. That's one way of looking at it. There's another interesting approach which I saw. I hadn't seen this before, but looked around. And it goes even, Baruch, you wanted to say that maybe these people conquer the land, in the Battle of Sichon and Og. Maybe they even conquered it beforehand. So if you look in Divrei Hayamim, Aleph Perek Beis. So there the Pasuk says, V'achar b'chetzrodo bas machir avi gilad. So you have Chetzrod, who he had relations, I guess. He married the daughter of Machir, who is the father of Gilad. V'hu lekacha, and he married her. V'hu ben chishim shana, he was 60 years old. V'ateh lo es skuv. They gave birth. She gave birth to Seguv, who Seguv holedes Yair, and Seguv gave birth to Yair. Bilo Esri Mishalosh Arim Beretz Gilad, and he had 23 cities in the land of Gilad. So basically, now Machir is the son of Menashe. So you have Menashe has a son named Machir. Machir has a son named Gilad. Has a daughter named. Is a daughter, an unnamed daughter. The daughter marries Chetzron. Chetzron, by the way, is a descendant of Yehuda. And so Chetzron, the daughter, they have a daughter named Seguv, who has a son named Yair. Okay? So now, the Rav Zadja Gaon says the following. Seguv holed is Yair. Who Yair ben Menashe? Hakasu Bator. This is Yair ben Menashe. It's written in the Torah. Now, by the way, what we're saying here, we have Yair ben Menashe. Now, by the way, it can't be, we're going to see, it must mean a descendant of Menashe. It can't be, because Seguv was Yair's mother, and Seguv's mother's father was Machir, and Machir's father was Menashe. So Menashe was the great-great-grandfather of Yair. He couldn't have also been the father. So probably when it says, Ve'ir ben Menashe means a descendant. V'afalpi shechetzron haya mi shevet Yehuda. Even though Chetzron was from Shevet Yehuda, Yair nikra al shem avi imo b'nei shechashiv haya v'ish melchamot. So really, it says Yair, even though he's from Shevet Yehuda, because Yair's right comes from Chetzron, but still, he's referenced to be we talk about his lineage from Menashe, from Machir, because he conquered a lot of land. Let's continue. V'zei Yair ben Seguv ben Chetzron hu mishev Yehuda. So Yair's mother was Seguv, and Seguv's father was Chetzron, and Chetzron was from Sheva Yehuda. But nevertheless, v'nikraim al shev imo lefisha Machir avi imo hayachashuv. But still, the lineage, when Divrei Hayomim is writing it, is running from Menashe, because he was chashuv. V'zeh Yair ben Seguv ben Chetzron. I'm sorry. U'machir avi imo haya rosh v'av l'gilad. So Machir, again, Machir's son-in-law was Chetzron, and Machir was also the father of Gilad. V'Yair tafas l'gilad acharav l'fichach nikra, and he grabbed. Now, Gilad here refers to the land of Gilad after Machir. Lefichach nikra al shem avi imo. Therefore, Yair conquered Gilad, and therefore, just like Machir did. See, look, now, what's he saying here? V'yachu b'nei Machir ben Menashe Gilada. They're conquering Gilad. Yair, great-grandson of Yosef, is conquering Chavot Yair. In other words, the student of Sadia Gaon says that after Machir conquered Gilad, then Yair, a great-grandson, conquered also Gilad. Okay? V'al shem ha'nachala she'tafsu b'mei shilton oso shel Yosef shehaya melech al haaretz. And this is the land that they grabbed when? During the reign of Yosef. Yosef was the king of all the land. So the student of Sadia Gaon goes even more extreme than you, Baruch. He said they didn't, Yair and B'nai Machir, we're not talking about, they didn't conquer the land now, when the Bnei Israel left Egypt, you know, for 40 years later, they conquered the land in the days of Yosef. Uchshemes Yosef v'achav nischazku ha'omos v'yichu gushur v'aram shayu goyim v'tafsut chavot yair. After Yosef and his brothers died, so then the locals reconquered, they grabbed the land. V'eskenaz v'esprosesh shalokach novach v'yimei machir gabol sam tafsu gushur v'aram. And also Kenaz and its suburbs that Novach had taken, the days of Machir, the son of Menashe, they also grabbed. Shishimir, Kol Eila Tafsu B'nei Machir B'nei Gilad. The children of Machir and the children of Gilad all conquered this land. And Vizel Shama Broshe Matos, V'yachu B'nei Machir B'nei Menashe Gilada. V'yair, and that's what it means when the Pasuk says they went to Gilad. V'yir Ben Menashe, Shu Ben Bito. And Yair ben Menashe was really a great-great-grandson. Halach b'osos man v'lokach chavot Yair. Right? And Novach in that time conquered it. And it says, v'takfu ha-goyim aleyam v'lachum yadam v'yoshvu bahem achivu be'eretz Yisrael. So, according to this, they, in the days of Yosef, they already conquered this land. And then after Yosef and his brothers died, shortly after that, the locals reconquered it, and now that the land is free and clear, because Sichon and Ogre wiped out, Lachach nis'avu b'nei Machir la'shevet b'eretz ha'Gilad. The children of Machir wanted to live in Gilad, uvitfusat aviyam nasa Moshe lahem. Moshe gave it to them. Why? Because they had conquered it way before. Dalacha be'er heitev. You should know, Ki osama devarim shel chumash, these things are the chumash shel machir v'yir v'novach sfurot l'shevarim. The Torah is telling a story that happened way, way long ago. Ki machir v'yair v'novach lo lachu klum b'midbar. Says they're not. They didn't take anything in the desert. They didn't give Rabbi Yosef Glili. Yir ben Menashe, machir ben Menashe, noldu b'chayi Yaakov avinu meisu l'achar Moshe. So there were some who said they lived a long time. But you don't have to say that. You can simply, so the student of Rishon Yigod is basically saying that this was something that happened years ago in the days of Yosef. And that's why Moshe gave them this land. And that's why they're not subject to the conditions about going into, you know, Eretz Yisrael. This is something separate. This is land that they had conquered way before. Moshe gave it to them. So that's a second approach. First approach, They had a lot of cattle too. They wanted the cattle to follow, just like Reuven and Gad. And so they were included in the negotiation, though they're not mentioned. Number two, this was specific land that their ancestors had conquered many, many years ago, and they wanted it back, and Moshe gave it to them. Okay? Third approach. I found that fascinating, that student of Sajigo. Third approach. The Netziv and the Tzror Hamor give another explanation. Now, question is, how do you feel about, I guess, well, I don't know, we're all living in the diaspora. But how do you feel? You live in the diaspora, you have the opportunity to make Aliyah. But not only do you have the opportunity to make Aliyah, but you choose to live right outside Eretz Yisrael for cattle, for materialistic reasons. So the question is, how strong are you spiritually that you're living outside Eretz Yisrael? How strong are you spiritually that you decide to live, number one, that you decide to live outside Eretz Yisrael for materialistic reasons? And how strong are you spiritually living outside Eretz Yisrael? You don't have the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, the spiritual power of Eretz Yisrael. So, according to this third approach, it was Moshe who forced Menashe to, or part of Menashe's tribe, to remain outside Eretz Yisrael. Why is that? So let's see the Netziv. The Netziv in Parshas Devarim, Paragim of Pasuk Design, he writes, Nir Alpi Yesh Lisbon in Aod Shaharbei Hirbei Moshe Rabbeinu Chalak Chati Shem Menashe Harbei Lefi Erech Shnei Shvatim Elu. So Moshe Rabbeinu sort of divided part of Menashe a lot with these two tribes. The Gam lo hista imam tanai b'nei Gad b'nei Reuven, but he didn't make any condition with them of them fighting on the western side of the Jordan River like he did with Gad and Reuven. It's true that B'nai Bachir, the children of Menashe, went to Gilad to conquer it. There's no reason though, to give them the lands because Menashe went out to conquer the land on the east side of Jordan River. There's no reason for Moshe to give them this land. There it seems, on the eastern side of the Jordan River, the power of Torah is very little. It's not as strong. Okay, shtadel lahashtil bekirbam gedolei Torah, shi'iru machshake v'chashchei eretz ba'or koach shelahem. He wanted to implant in their midst gedolei Torah, Torah leaders that would illuminate the darkness of the land with their light of their power, because it says that mini machir yardu mechokikim haynu gedolei Torah rashi yeshivos. That the children of Machir were great Torah scholars. Because the pasuk says, Lo yaser she'et mi Yehuda mechoki mi bein raglav. Remember, so he says, Elu b'nei banav shel hilo shemlamdim Torah barabim. So the lashon of a mechokek refers to people who teach Torah. And again, even though the blessing is obviously with Sheva Yehuda, but Machir, they're called mechokekim, they also were great Torah scholars. And he also writes that from the children of Machir, Haya Mishev Yehuda, they're also from Shev Yehuda. Because what do we say? Zera Yair ben Menashe, Hayu b'nei Yehuda, Kimvor b'divrei Hayami. What do we say? Remember, Yair's mother was Seguv. Seguv's mother was the son of Machir, who came from Menashe. But Seguv's father was Chetzron, who's from Sheva Yehuda. So Yair's grandfather was from Sheva Yehuda. And Moshe very much wanted them to live in the east side of the Jordan River. Therefore Moshe gave them a lot of land until they agreed. They want to live. Menashe wanted to live on the western side of the Jordan River. So Moshe bribed them with shlichut. Right? They were shlichim. They were Mizrahi shlichim. So they wanted to live on the east side of Jordan to spread Kimitzion Tete Torah, to spread Torah to those who unfortunately would live in the diaspora. And Rav Avram Saba in Surah Mor gives a different take on this, and he says that he says a similar idea. He says the Moshe Tzivah Zebamamar Hashem Shu Yivaru Chatzim Menashe Melech Shnei Shvatim LaHagim Aleim Ulatzilam Mitzaratam, that he wanted them to protect them, to save them from their calamity. Lefish et tzadik yisod olam. V'zeh shemo asher yikru'u Yosef atzadik. Yosef was a tzadik, right? And Menashe comes from Yosef. And the zchus of Yosef, he will assist them. And again, either you could say because they were living outside of Yisrael, or because there was their materialism which drove them to want to live on the eastern side of the Jordan River. So therefore, part of Menashe comes from Yosef, who were scribes, who were Gedolei Torah, would assist them. According to this third approach, Moshe himself initiated this. You could also, an alternative way of looking at this, is at the end of the day, Moshe wanted to connect Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laretz. The point is, Moshe did not want to send all of Menashe to Chutz Laretz. He wanted part of Menashe. So what does that mean? Part of Menashe is in Eretz Yisrael, and part of Menashe is outside Yisrael. He wanted to create that connection with Eretz Yisrael, where that basically, like, you know, with this one tribe, it's both. Because I think the point is, and he's trying to teach us a message, that even if we find ourselves outside Eretz Yisrael, which Reuven and Gad were, we need to make sure that we're always connected to Eretz Yisrael. So in a world before, you know, WhatsApp or email, telephones, you know, how are we going to connect? Right? How are we going to connect? We're going to have one tribe, one Shevet, part in Eretz Yisrael and part outside Eretz Yisrael. So again, we can look, and these are just a few ways of understanding the role of Menashe. Either they were a small group that had the same concerns as Gad and Reuven, so they weren't mentioned explicitly. Maybe they had conquered this land, years ago, hundreds of years previously, in the days of Yosef, and they wanted their ancestral land, and Moshe granted them. Or maybe, due to Moshe's insistence, he needed them to connect with those living outside of Israel, who may have been on a lower spiritual level because they were living outside of Israel, or because of their materialism, the reason why they wanted to live outside of Israel, or simply that we want to always create that connection, always maintain that connection as much as we can, even if we find ourselves outside Eretz Yisrael, to connect ourselves with the Holy Land as much as possible.